Oh, I've got more problems than that, my friend.
What happened?
Oh, yeah, it sounds better. What were you on? Were you on cell, not Wi-Fi? Or
no,
something?
No. I was on. I was not on my mix pre because. Oh, you don't even want to know this. So the other a week and a half ago, I decided I wanted to play around with Golden Gate a little bit.
Oh, the beta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I...
Mac OS 27, for yes. Those of you keeping track.
And so I created a new partition or, you know, whatever, APFS container. Mm. And I downloaded the new version of the thing. And it never gave me an option of where to target the installation, and it just installed over the top of my main installation.
Oh, no.
Yep.
Okay. So now you're stuck because can you downgrade? Can you go back?
If I completely wipe my drive and rebuild from.
Oh, man. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not.
So effectively, you're just using the beta until they release the final.
Exactly. And I will tell you, public beta one was okay. I mean, there were like a few little things, but it was generally like, okay, yeah.
And I've read it's pretty stable.
Yeah, and then beta 2 came out the other day, and I installed beta 2, and it is way buggier than beta 1.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like there are times when buttons just don't work. I can't use the menu bar at the top of the screen some of the times. I have to like leave that app and come back to it to be able to get up to the menu bar. And I was a little worried that for some reason it was not showing my mix pre at all in the sound settings.
Yikes.
And so when it connected and I was like, oh, crap, I forgot I didn't move it over to the sound things. I was worried that it wasn't going to see it at all. And then I turned it off, turned it on, and ended up working. Anyway, here we are.
They're a $5 trillion company. Come on. Come on.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a beta. I'm at fault here, or at least.
Yes, but it shouldn't. The second beta shouldn't be buggier than the first unless it's only the new features that are buggy.
No,
but if they're going backwards, then...
I'm noticeably like finder bugs and button bugs, like buggy bugs.
Yikes.
Anyway, maybe it's just me. Who knows? But anyway, I'm stuck on that. Stuck on the Band-Aid.
On you.
Oh, okay. You were going a different direction.
I was going stuck on you.
I was going stuck on a Band-Aid and a Band-Aid stuck on me.
You know, I just watched an interview with Barry Manilow.
The Questlove one?
Yeah. Did you watch that?
I listened to the podcast version, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Man, he's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah. And one thing I really like about Questlove is that I think there's a lot of people who would think that he'd be like, you know, Barry Manilow, whatever. But then Barry Manilow comes on his show and he's just like, dude, you are an icon.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like the fact that he's, you know, all in.
Yeah. He knows what's up.
Yeah.
He's got good taste.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So good for him. Welcome to episode 377.
Maybe.
Of On Taking Pictures. I am Bill Wadman, and that there is Jeffrey Sidoris.
Hello there.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm okay. Yeah. I'll keep it light for now.
Okay.
You know, you mentioned Finder.
Yeah.
And a couple weeks ago, I was at the thrift with Adrian and found an A3 size flatbed scanner for $10.
Okay.
And I was first of all, A3 is big, right? That's 11 by 17. So I can, if it worked, I could scan, you know, Life magazine, Look, all those big tabloid size, beautiful. Wait,
what did you say? $10, $20?
$10. Yeah. And I powered it up. It powered up in the store. Still no guarantee that it's going to work just because it gets power. Brought it home and man, flawless. Works beautifully. 2400 DPI it scans at. And at that point, at 2400 DPI, images cease to become images and you can see, you know, printing process.
Yeah, certainly and when you get to any sort of magazine or inkjet or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the, what I heard somebody, you know, remember the Titan submersible?
Sure.
The guy said they, they ceased to be biology and became physics.
Oh, God. You know, I actually did some research on that a few weeks ago, questioning how quickly the implosion happened and whether or not they experienced it.
Apparently so quickly that they didn't experience.
Yeah, that they would have heard the cracking and stuff leading up to it, but the actual implosion would happen faster than the nervous system of a human happens. Yeah.
Well, put a pin in that, the cracking especially. Put a pin in that for a sec. Anyway, so I got this scanner, and it's great. And it's I'm scanning all kinds of things just to see what happens.
Sure.
And it helped me to realize that my organizational, and I've got quotes around that, my organizational system for assets is woefully unsatisfactory. I just have folders
physical,
everywhere.
Physical or digital?
Digital. All of the folders, even for my photos, for design assets. Anyway. So I was like, what can I use? I don't want to use Bridge. I don't want to use anything Adobe. Affinity has yet to build any sort of digital asset management. So I've been on this quest for a digital asset manager. Mm-hmm. And I landed on this thing called, here, I'm going to paste this in, called PixelPath.
Without the E in Pixel.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. Mac only, iOS and Mac OS. And this thing is gorgeous. It's fast. You can tag, you can rate, you can keyword. I had a brief exchange with the guy who's writing it yesterday about some of the new features that are coming up and, you know, where metadata is stored. Is it stored in the database or is it stored in the files themselves? And the answer is both. But what's nice about it, I wanted something that didn't move or make copies of all my files. Like I tried Eagle. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
Eagle is another one, but Eagle has its own sort of proprietary database and it copies things into there, almost like Photos. You know how you can't look at a photo in the Photos app. There's no like reveal and finder because it puts it in its own, you know, whatever.
Library. Yeah.
Yeah. So this thing is again super fast, all sorts of native file formats it works with, and no subscription. It's a $15 fee, one time only, forever.
This is a Mac thing, this is a phone thing,
this is Mac and iOS. So Mac OS, iOS. And you know, you, because it uses your existing folder structure, I could have, let's say I wanted to have like a greatest hits folder that I wanted to have on my phone to show people stuff that I do, whatever. I can sync just that folder to iCloud and then have it everywhere I am.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool. So super cool. Yeah. Super cool. If you're looking for something like that, go check it out. PixelPath, PixelPath.com.
Now this is a sort of a bridge alternative because you're not doing anything to the images other than looking at them and maybe rating them or organizing them.
Yep. That's exactly it.
And if you move it between, If you open, do you actually see your folder structure on here? So you could move things between folders and it actually moves them on the drive.
That's the way I understand it.
Okay.
And you can have items can exist in multiple libraries because it's just referencing. It's basically creating a symlink to the original asset.
Yep.
And it, you know, there's mapping, there's, you know, batch rename, it's, you know, all kinds of stuff. So super cool. I've just gotten it and I'm just testing it, but it seems to do everything that I want it to do for now.
Have you come up with a naming schema?
You know, for photographs, it's the tried and true sort of year and then subfolder of year and place. I know that you do like a people, places, things structure. We talked about that a little bit. I just have things by year, and then if you drill down further, it's, you know, like 11/22/18 Paris.
Right.
Or, you know, 7/22/15 downtown Los Angeles.
Right.
And then what I'll do in this is tag those things and use metadata instead of the folder structure itself to kind of keep track of things.
Yep. Okay.
So pretty cool. Anyway, there you go.
It is interesting. $15. You would think that, and I guess I'm sure there are solutions to this, but you would think that at this point we would be able to just say, computer, just organize this so I'll know where to find these pictures of Jeffrey or whatever.
Yeah. Well,
we're not quite there yet.
We're not there yet. And one of the things that I brought up to Chris is there a possibility in a future update to add a different kind of metadata in terms of maybe where an asset has been used? So, let's say that, and maybe it's an extension of a keyword, but let's say you want to see all the photos that you used in Drabbles, or sure. You want to see all the photos that appeared on a magazine cover or something like right. that, to be able to not just tag them, but build associations of where specific assets have been used or appeared or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, he's absolutely willing to look at it. He said, yeah, send me an example of kind of what you're wanting, and I'll take a look at it and see if maybe we can figure something out. So really cool.
You know, Adobe added a feature to Photoshop recently that will name your layers. If it's just layer one, layer 17, whatever, it will come up with names for your layers. But
based on what criteria?
Well, that is my question. So I hit the button one day a few weeks ago. And I forget, let me see if I can pull it up, because I think I stuck it on my Instagram. The thing that it popped up was, yeah, it named, okay, I had a layer that had, sorry, I was playing music. I had a bunch of layers where I was doing some retouching and stuff.
Okay.
And it said abstract brown line drawing.
Well, that helps. Thanks, Adobe.
Yeah. And then one of them was
good job raising prices to finance that feature.
Abstract color gradient square.
Yeah. Okay.
I was like, what do you mean abstract? What, you know, and it's just like
abstract soft squiggles. Those are clouds.
Yeah. Quit. Right. And I was like, well, that's not, if it said, retouched pixels or whatever it is, 100% retouched pixels or whatever, like that would make sense to me. It's almost like it's not specific to the mode that you're kind of using Photoshop for. If you're an illustrator, maybe those squiggles would be squiggles. Right. But if I'm a retoucher, those squiggles are very definitely not just squiggles. I'm doing something for a reason.
It sounds like Rocky from Hail Mary named it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Large circle texture planet.
What if large circle texture planet was already taken? I actually rewatched that last night with Heather.
It was so good. It's so good.
It is. No. Yeah. Fist my bump. You know, when they were going to the moon with Artemis 2, the astronauts were talking about something, and the Capcom said, amaze, amaze, amaze.
That is funny.
Yeah.
That is funny.
So I will take a look at Pixel Path. I mean, it's Pixel Path. It's not something I specifically need, but because I almost never use Bridge or any of those things. What, by the way, one of the reasons why I wanted to switch to macOS 27, 70,
yep. What, 20,
is,
27.
Is that what it is? Okay.
27,
Was apparently compressed raw Fuji photos show up their icons in Finder.
Oh, in Finder now.
Right, which is something that hasn't been. So if I loaded up a SD card or whatever it is, and I was like, wait, this is an old SD card. What are these things? Let me make sure I have them somewhere else before I delete them.
Hmm.
I couldn't do that. Because I'd have to go into Bridge to see what the hell was on the card, you know? And now it just shows up. However, here's a pet peeve for you. Does it bother you that macOS rounds the corners on everything? Like even in preview, even, you know what I mean?
It doesn't. That's not what bothers me. What bothers me is that, and it's why I never upgraded to Tahoe, is that the border radius from window to app to window to... It's all inconsistent.
Yeah.
There's no, in fact, there's a little third party app that you can, I think it's called Liquid Radius, that you can
fix that.
Now they've apparently fixed it in Golden Gate, but that seemed to be like a huge omission. And it's the last design guy who wasn't really a design guy at all. So Alan Dye was his name.
Yeah. Nice way to call him out. Like, yeah. His name was Alan Dye.
Good job, Alan. You had one job, make him consistent. That's the thing. I don't mind the rounding.
Okay.
It's not bad.
I hit spacebar on an image, it pops up in preview, and I don't see all of the pixels of my image.
Yeah, but it's so few. I mean, what do you like the corners? They're probably not sharp anymore.
What does it give you?
So what?
What does that do for you?
It's a softer representation. It looks less like an engineer designed it and more like an artist designed.
A softer representation.
It's a softer. That's what it is. I'm reading Apple's copy right now, the marketing copy.
Does that make you feel good? Talking about a softer representation.
Apple's crack marketing team.
All right. So what are you going to do with this scanner?
I don't know yet. One of the ideas was to scan different types of printing technologies to see what they look like at 2400 DPI.
Okay.
One of the other things was to take a 2-inch piece of a 2-inch square of one of my paintings and blow it up to 36 inches and see what it looks like completely abstracted and printed large. I don't know. Right now I'm just scanning and seeing what comes out of it. I haven't had a flatbed scanner in probably 20 years.
Oh, okay.
And when I did have one, it was kind of specific to just scan. I wasn't using those kinds of assets in the same way. Now you can't just scan a Life magazine cover and use it because it's copywritten and all that. But sure. When you're looking at something at 2400 DPI as more of a study of 2400 DPI is so detailed that you can see.
It becomes an abstract, yeah.
Yeah, you can see the halftone pattern. You can see ink bleed. You can see dot pitch. You can see all of those things that are unique to that sort of printing technology, whether it's, you know, lithography or offset or letterpress or whatever it is. And that's kind of the thing that I'm looking forward to. And I want to let it tell me where to go with it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it yet. The fact that it was $10 and it's A3, which is big, was all I needed to think about at the moment.
Yeah.
And it was it was dead simple. There's a simple driver and, Mac OS just uses image capture and it comes up right in the native image capture app and it's fine. It's great.
Can you still buy scanners that big? Who are they still making them?
They do. The company still makes it. It's either VScan or Visan, V-I-I.
Okay. Hey, who the hell still makes
V-I-I-S-A-N. And this is primarily, they say, for like CAD drawings and things like that. But it works great with photography as well.
Oh, it's a very kind of specific.
Yeah.
Is it older, you think?
3240. It's still current on their website. I don't know when it was released, but it's the Visan 3240.
Goes for $500.
Yeah.
So how did you get it so cheap? What is somebody doing getting rid of this thing?
I don't know. Once in a while, you see little treasures like that. I'm kind of writing a little newsletter article about it, essay piece. And, one of the things I said, I go to the electronics section because Adrian will go through a thrift store and she will go line by line or aisle by aisle, and she's got such a broad knowledge base on things. She can recognize, that's a such and such glassware or this kind of side table or whatever it is. I tend to just go to electronics and I'm looking for an old Marantz receiver.
Sure.
If only, a Sansui 9090 still in the box would be kind of neat, but never going to happen. I did see an NAD receiver in pretty good shape. One of the RCA jacks on the back was damaged. And I was like,
which RCA was it?
One of the inputs. I don't remember if it was phono or CD or something.
But you could have worked around it.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it wasn't clear. You'd have to open it up to see whether the damage extended to the main board. And I don't know how they're put together. So is that a little daughter card that kind of, exists off to the side or is it part of the main board? I don't know. I've never looked inside one.
Yeah, I had a few years ago, I found a Macintosh preamp on the street.
On the street,
you talk about that, right?
Yeah. Oh my God, what a find.
And I mean, and I could have gotten an original thing and fixed it, but I was like, this was going to get thrown out anyway. So I just bought an RCA jack and I, you know, soldered it in and it totally works.
Yeah.
It's not pretty and no one would ever buy it as an original whatever, but you know, if I'm going to use it, it's fine. I'm not using it actually, it's sitting in the closet. So
is the original equipment, is it functionally different or is it just aesthetically different?
It's aesthetically different. And actually it's what's annoying about it is that the RCAs that I generally use on my stereo are kind of stiff and the two ends are kind of connected to each other.
Mm.
Not connected like the two terminals are connected, but they kind of branch off the same thing at like 4 inches before the ends, you know?
Ah, okay.
So, yeah. and they're not crazy flexible. So when you put them into the back of this thing, like one of them is needs to go a little bit further than the other. Do you know what I'm saying? Cause the jack is a little bit out from it. So just the cables that I use make it slightly hard to use that way. It totally works. I mean, if anybody needs a Macintosh preamp, let me know. But yeah,
so it's a preamp, not a receiver. It's just power.
It's not even not even a power amp. It's just basically a switcher and volume control. Yeah, I think it has tone controls too. I think on it, but anyway, I have a better preamp than that, so that's what I end up using. But it's just kind of crazy that somebody was throwing it out like that, you know.
You know, there seems to be, I've read a lot lately about not just people our age, but young kids going back to older tech, whether it's, you know, Walkman, Discman, mini disc, you know, that kind of thing. And I think it's fascinating because for a long time you could get, maybe not Macintosh because it's such a recognizable brand name, but you could get some of the different models of Techniques or Panasonic or even Marantz receivers for a song.
Harman Kardon.
Yeah, Harman Kardon. And now they're back up to, you know, charging a premium for them because these things have become sought after again.
Yeah, I had a Harman Kardon 740, I think, back in the day when I was a kid. And it's still like the best receiver I think I've ever heard. But if I pulled it up now, it would probably need to be recapped and whatever, because now it's 50 years old. You'd have to go through and really do it. And that's a little bit outside of my comfort zone. Yep. Despite that Mendit Mark guy. Did I ever talk about Mendit Mark?
Mendit Mark? No.
There's this guy on YouTube who's like this crazy guy over in Britain somewhere who has 240,000 followers. I'm assuming his name is Mark. But
be a good guess.
Yeah, he owns a workshop where he fixes stuff. So he fixes, you know, he'll do these YouTube videos that are like an hour long of him fixing a Yamaha amp or a tape deck from Bang & Olufsen or I mean, whatever it is. And they are, in my opinion, in my humble weirdo opinion, absolutely fascinating. And he'll go in and he'll, you know, he's the kind of guy who understands it on a level that I'm sure you and I understand things on this level that everyone else thinks we're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But you hear him talk and he's like, oh, you know, well, this thing burnt out over here on the board, which definitely means it's this diode over on the other corner must be the problem. And it's like, how do you know it's that diode? You know, and then he'll pull out the schematics, you know. And like, I can't even follow which line crosses which other line, you know, because it's, you know, it's like this rat's nest of numbers and boxes and stuff. And he's reading it like he's reading, you know, the Odyssey out of, you know, and at one point he had some, I forget what it was. It was like a preamp cards for this really high end, whatever it was. And he's like, I don't have any schematics for this. So I made my own. And he like brings this thing in.
As one does.
And he'd figured out the circuit, like just from looking at the board. Like, anyway, but the funny thing about it is that he explains it all. And whenever he hits a thing where something doesn't work, he goes, well, that didn't work. I guess we'll have to try something else. Like, he's just very, sounds almost aloof, you know?
That's funny.
Oh, he's absolutely fascinating. If you ever need something to watch, Mendit Mark. I'll put the link in the show notes. But But yeah, I look at that kind of stuff and I think, man, what he would have done to this little
right
preamp, you know, he would have, it would have been perfect. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Here, hold on. I'm going to send you something.
He'll 3D print pieces of mechanisms. The first thing I ever saw him do, I think we did talk about this once, where he created a board to fix a, it was a Pioneer tape deck for a Ferrari or something. And there were only like 200 of them ever made, or, you know, whatever it was. And behind, like, you know, when you dial in a radio, you know, the little bar goes across, but the bar wasn't like in the old school ones. It's almost like it's on a rail and there's a piece of string, you know what I mean? That kind of pulls it across or whatever.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. And in fact, Panasonic made one. It was the 7600 that had like a little motor where you hit the little buttons and it goes and it scan and stop. But inside it looked sexy from the front, but inside it was just a string just pulling this thing along. Right.
And so on this one, though, instead of that, it was a series of like 30 LEDs behind these little things. And that was broken and cracked. And so he designed and ordered out a new PCB that would fit where the old one was, installed little mini LEDs on it, and wired the whole thing up and replaced the part. Like, he recreated the part that was broken from scratch. Wow. And yeah, it's super fun to watch. And it's, you know, it's like these guys who take apart watches and put them back together again.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's like that, but with electronics. And the way he figures things out, he'll be like, oh, I guess I have to rewire this motor. And he'll like pull this motor out and pull all the windings off and figure out how many windings it needed to be to get to the right power. Anyway, Mendip Mark, I will put a link in the show notes.
I love the show notes. I used to go to my mom had some friends here. I'm going to paste this into the chat.
I see home for sale. Yeah.
Take a look at this house. This was their house.
Who are these people?
It was my mom's best friend and her husband lived in this house. Now, this house is
why is this
concrete
house so
and
cheap,
glass,
by the way? Yeah.
Because it's, I don't know.
Okay.
It's 5,000 square feet, two bedrooms.
Yep.
That's it. Two bedrooms. That's awesome. Two bedroom, four bath. And it was just this stunning concrete and glass house. And they had a whole music room / library that when I would go over there with my mom, she and Adele was the woman's name.
Your mom knows Adele?
They were super tight. they would be off doing their thing. And I would be in the music / library room with a sketchbook. And they had this incredible, this is where the Sansui 9090 came in. That was their receiver that they had. And they had the big JBL speakers, the ones with the cubed foam cushions over the front.
Sure.
And this incredible turntable, and they had this fantastic collection of vinyl. That's actually where I first heard Steely Dan's Asia. But there was something about, even then, the idea of having a room in your home that was dedicated to listening and reading. I just thought that was the first time I'd ever experienced something like that. And it was just, it wasn't lost on me even then. And this was, you know, junior high and high school. But just having this entire room with the dim lights and, you know, windows overlooking the valley and just sitting in there listening to music and drawing was, it still resonates as one of the happy times in my life.
Magical.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to put that in show notes or no?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead if you want.
Yeah.
And they don't live there anymore. I wish, you know, all things being equal and money no object, it came up for sale a couple of years ago.
Right.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, $50 million.
No, it's $1.3 million, which in California is not a lot of money for a home.
Yeah.
And this is in the hills, you know, outside San Bernardino. It's got a big pool.
The thing that I would be scared of is fires.
Yes.
Because it's right up in the hills, right? This is like prime fire locations.
Yes, it is. All surrounded by like eucalyptus trees and whatnot.
Yeah. But man, that is a pretty house.
It is.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the active listening thing is, I don't know, it's a whole other.
You had to have done that, right? When you were a kid. What? I mean, we would just hang out and listen to records and listen to CDs. And
whatnot. I still do it now, but you know, I think it's rare.
with people, or are you, is it, has it become mostly a solo pursuit now?
Mostly a solo pursuit, but every once in a while, friends will be over and we'll each start just calling out songs and we'll have like a little mini dance party, you know?
See, I miss that, just that act of, I mean, it's active listening, yes, but we had a friend, there was a group of us that hung out together, and one of our friends was named Jay Ishimoto. And Jay worked at the Upland Tennis Club and always had the keys. So after hours, on occasion, he would say, hey, why don't you come over to the club? And, you know, the places closed down, but we would just put on music over the whole, you know, he would put on music, and he had great taste. He was the guy who made the mixtapes, right? He was the mixtape guy. And they all had names that were anagrams, and he would never tell anybody what the anagram meant, but incredible taste in music. First heard, you know, the Violent Femmes off of him. I first heard REM from him. Like tons of really just at that time, sort of 80s alternative bands I got from Jay.
Yeah.
You know, if there was a beach party where we would go to the beach around a fire pit in Huntington Beach, Jay was the de facto DJ because he had such great taste in music.
Right.
And it was just that thing of sitting around a fire, listening to music, or sitting at the Upland Tennis Club, listening to music and talking. And man, I miss that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, really, I guess it's probably a different thing for the kids, something equally important to them, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, are there those kinds of shared experiences anymore? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it all virtual? Is it all, you know, you're at your place doing your thing and I'm at my place doing my thing, and those shared experiences have changed, or if not vanished completely, I don't know.
We use SharePlay to watch the movie together, that kind of thing. I've never used that feature. You ever see that feature?
You can no.
Yeah, you can like listen to music. I can put on music on Apple Music right now, I think.
Don't I have to be part of like a family group or something?
No, I think if I let's do a little live test right now.
So do I turn on Apple Music on my phone?
Oh, here we go. I'm going to share play music. And did it pop up on your Mac right now? Just saying, you want to play this thing with Bill?
Wait. No.
Okay. It just asked me if I wanted to.
Let me turn on music. Music. So I'm opening the music app.
Yeah, there's a, it's because, yeah, I think it asked me to share play. Maybe it's because I'm using the different version of macOS than you are. How old of a version are you using right now?
Whatever the, what was the one before Tahoe? Catalina?
The Sonoma, I think. Yeah, supposedly I am currently playing and sending it to you, share play.
Sequoia.
Oh, you're using a very old version. Okay. I think it's because you don't have the feature, but eventually you will have that feature. And
that's super cool. So even if it's not in my library.
Well, I think it's the kind of thing, like if we both have, see, I just stopped it and it said end Red Vines for everyone, only for me, or cancel. It's like end it for everyone. So,
okay, wait, do it again. I've got something changed. Wait a minute. Okay. Hold on a second.
I'm hitting play and I'm going to, you want to share this place, share play the song with everyone? Yes. Play now.
Okay. There is an icon in my toolbar that just turned green.
Yep. Say currently playing Red Vines by Amy Mann.
Oh, there it is. Wait. And if I say, oh, shut up. Okay. I'm going to click join and see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Join share play for Red Vines with Bill Wadman.
Yeah.
I'm going to say join share play.
And theoretically, you will start listening to the same music that I'm listening to.
Oh, but see, I don't have a paid subscription to Apple Music, but otherwise it would work.
Yep.
Wow.
So like if you're both Apple Music people, and I think you can do the same with stuff on like Apple TV. We want to watch Ted Lasso together or whatever. We can do that.
I can get 2 months for free.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
wow.
Anyway, so there are things like that. Now, whether or not the kids are using them in that way, I have no idea.
Yeah. I had no idea about that feature. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a cool feature, but I don't know how many people are actually using it, right?
Right.
I've been really bad lately.
You did a bad thing.
I haven't picked up my camera for fun in 2 months.
I haven't picked up your camera for fun ever. So,
so I've got you beat. You hack.
Why not?
I don't know. It just sits there, stares at me.
Other than your phone?
I mean, occasionally I'll take a picture on my phone.
Okay. This is interesting, Bill. Keep going.
I was up at my mother's house with my mom's friend, Grant and my wife. And, you know, we went to the Mystic Seaport and we hung out on the dock and.
Wait, Mystic like spooky or Mystic like that's the name?
Mystic Connecticut, like Mystic Pizza.
Oh.
Mystic Connecticut.
That's a place. Okay.
Mystic Connecticut is a place. And in Mystic Connecticut, there is
I thought it was like Shermer, Illinois, like they just did it for the movie.
No. There's actually a Mystic. In fact, there's a Mystic Pizza in downtown Mystic.
Okay.
Anyway, they have a seaport there. And in the seaport, you go and you pay $30 or whatever it is. And you go in and there's one of the, I think might be the only surviving wooden whaling ship.
Oh, wow.
The Charles Morgan. You can go on and you can walk downstairs and you can like see.
Is it in a display or is it on the water?
It's on the water.
Oh, wow.
And so you go on the water and then they were showing how the little boats, you know, would go harpoon the whales or whatever. And then they'd come back and then they'd have to pull those little ships up out of the water. And so it was like, all right, we need volunteers. And so me and Grant volunteered and we're on a rope line. Bum, 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 ho, you know.
Singing sea shanties all the while.
Singing sea shanties and pulling this boat up.
Huh.
Now, we took pictures of that. I took pictures of my mother at the, you know, the wheel of the ship. And you know what I mean? Like we walked around and yeah, for that kind of thing, yeah, I'll take pictures. But I haven't taken a picture seriously.
I was here picture.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's funny. I wrote a thing. The latest newsletter I did was me missing photography, frankly, and missing the constraint of a viewfinder specifically. Missing
a screen.
Well, yeah. Versus holding the phone, you know, the phone out in front of you and still seeing everything.
All the kids use their big cameras with the screen, not with a viewfinder.
No, I don't want that. I want the noise gone. I want the distraction gone. I want the constraint of that little rectangle.
Sure.
That's what I want. Because the world is noisy. The world is chaotic. The world is
well, you have a camera with a uncomfortable with one of these things.
I do. I have several, actually.
Did you pull them out?
Yes. I pulled out, took out the Olympus. I took out my Fuji, my X-Pro 1, still my favorite digital camera of all time. I do have it. I don't have an autofocus lens. I desperately want to get the 35-1.4 again. It's the best lens I've ever used on that camera. It's tack sharp when it finds its focus. It's slow, but I sold it like an idiot to get the 35 F2, which though faster has nowhere near the same character. So I sold that one and now I have no autofocus lenses and the combination of my eyeballs with the 2 megapixel screen in the X-Pro 1.
Yep.
Makes it really difficult to focus.
Well, they're $500. You can get one of those. You can make that happen.
They're $699 new, five something from MPB or KEH.
Crazy that they actually hold their value that strongly.
They slumped a little bit and then, you know, the kids kept going back to the old cameras, the X-Pro 1, the X-Pro 2.
Yep.
And they went back up in price, but that 35-1.4 with the square lens hood, that is what I would like to get again for my X-Pro 1. And then, you know, then it becomes, what do I do with the 16 megapixels? Well, I print them and then I scan them with that fun scanner that I just got and see what happens.
Yeah, you go two or three levels down there.
Yeah. And abstract it because I don't need to say, oh, well, that's a this or that's a that. I'm interested in drilling down a little further now and seeing what I see in that way.
It becomes a meta thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Did they stop making the X Pro, right?
Yes. There are rumors that an X Pro 4 is on the horizon, but I don't think it's going to happen. There's no reason to, right? What they could have done.
Everyone keeps buying the X100 or whatever.
Yeah. What they could have done is instead of coming out with the medium format GFX, the X Pro 4 could and should have been medium format.
Right.
That's what I think.
But they made that rangefinder with the...
Yeah, they had the 50R and now they have the 100R. But man, that was... I always thought that would have been a perfect upgrade to... Because otherwise, what are they going to do? They're going to use the same 40 megapixel sensor that's in the XT5. The XT6 is coming out.
Yeah.
But it's just another... You know, it's the Apple model. It's a little thinner. It's a little lighter. It's a little faster. It's a little more expensive.
What are you going to take pictures of?
Whatever catches my eye. That's the whole point, right? Is to get back into the viewfinder and let my eye wander, let my eye settle, see what it comes back to, what it can't shake. Yeah. I don't know.
You know, I've been getting a lot of emails lately from our listeners.
A Nigerian prince?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you will just release to me $50,000, I will in turn supply you with $5 million.
Tom in Michigan was in town.
That was so great that you guys got to spend some time together. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I am envious of that.
And actually, you know who else was here? Justin Weathersby was here in town.
No kidding.
Two weeks ago. And Conrad and I went out and had some pizza with him.
Isn't he... on the West Coast somewhere? Isn't it like Arizona?
Vegas. Or
Vegas. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
But he was in town for stuff I can't talk about because I was sworn to secrecy.
All right.
It was exotic dancing. But I mean, I'm sworn to secrecy.
Exotic dancing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he's been taking lessons. So it's, you know.
But anyway, I don't know if it was Justin or if it was Tom. One of them was talking to me about... the Google Plus.
Probably Tom. Tom still has such fond
big
memories.
Things for and the Google Plus.
I love that about him. He's still...
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And it's funny because he asked if I had, you know, well, is there anything left of that? And I was like, well, there was an option, I think, to basically download the whole archive, but I never did.
Oh, there was. I didn't know that.
I think so. But then again, you know, what are you going to do with an archive in a weird format that, you know what I mean? Like, unless you have the structure to put it on. Right. But I was thinking to myself, nowadays, you could have an AI build something to use that data. You know, I have an archive from Google Plus. Build me a site that can use all of this and do this again.
Yeah.
I'm sure it would be able to do something, at least as like an archive. So anyway, I was thinking I didn't have it. So maybe Millie had, because I think Millie was an admin of the, so for
Millie,
listeners,
maybe Freddie.
Well,
Freddie's gone now,
right.
But he would have been my suggestion.
Well, and I pinged Millie and she said, no, she didn't or whatever, but that she misses the group.
Yeah.
If only for having some sense of, a structure, a time and place, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. we used to do the themes and people would do the pictures and do that whole thing.
It was great. I mean, we were well ahead. I'm going to say it. We were well ahead of the curve in terms of photographic communities.
I agree. And then I got an email last week from, Noah. No, you know,
Noah Stevens?
Martinez. Actually, they just sent us another a separate email to podcast literally 31 minutes ago.
Oh,
but four days ago, I got an email from them about, and part of it was saying that, do you see yourself putting together a place where we listeners and yourselves can come up with something that sparks our creativity, pushes us to take a picture a month with a theme, blah, blah, blah. I don't know, whatever. But it's like, has the time for all of that moved on? Not necessarily for us, because I don't necessarily know why I want to take that on, but
I don't think it has. And I'll tell you why. I know a lot of people who are leaving Instagram, you know, Threads, sure. You know, all of this stuff. And some because of Meta's AI policies. And I rightfully agree with that. And I will probably do the same, inspired by listener and friend Martin Rotz, mm-hmm. who recently deleted all of his posts, save one that just says, hey, I've deleted all my posts. Here's where you can find me. I think that that's the direction I'm going to go as well. You know, I don't get any joy from the posting aspect of it. Where I get joy and interest is seeing what other people are doing. And I've found some really terrific artists, photographers, writers, friends, on the back of that. But in terms of, like, you know, I don't know if it's the same for you. Have you ever gotten a client from Instagram? I don't know very many people who've gotten clients or sales, no, or, you know.
But it's so frustrating because, yes, you're correct that I don't think I don't know that I've ever gotten a client because of something, but everyone expects you to have a thing there just mm-hmm. to show that you exist and are serious.
And I'll keep the account, to be clear. I'll keep the account, but it'll say, go find me on my website.
Yep.
Go subscribe to my newsletter if you want to keep up with what's going on.
Sure.
I have no interest in this part of it anymore.
Yeah.
And now, if the Google Plus group still existed, that was something different. That was real engagement. That was, you know, we've talked about this many times. Real friendships formed on the back of that group.
Yeah. And, I mean, I had two people come into town in the last week that I've hung out with who were on that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I guess the answer is no. I don't think it's gone. I don't think that the time or desire for that is gone. I just think there is nothing.
There's no easy way to do it.
No. And I don't think there's anything out there that, though flawed as it was, the Google Plus experience, there's still nothing out there, in my opinion, like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know what it would take to, like you said, I think AI could probably knock something like that out in a pretty short time.
Yeah,
I mean,
somebody wanted to
Claude code that thing.
Exactly.
You know, I had a bunch of ideas for a photo community that it's been in my head for a decade, but I don't want to be the admin of a photo community.
Right. That's what it comes down to, I think.
You know, now if, could I use Claude code to build it and then say, look, if somebody wants to take this and run with it, here's the framework, go do it.
Right.
That's interesting. But I have no desire to moderate, you know, forum posts.
Yeah.
I have no desire to do that.
Yeah. It's hard. It's all of these solutions to these things. It ends up being Facebook, which no one wants to use.
Mm-hmm.
Or some little commercial thing that may or may not be there in 6 months.
Yeah.
Or coming up with your own thing, which I guess you could do, but you know what's weird? This show has lived through eras of photography.
Yeah.
You know? Like, when did we do our first episodes? 2012? 2011?
Something like that. I think it was April of 2011, April, okay. April of 2012, something like that. Yeah. Right.
Okay. So, you know, we've been around for 14 years on and off.
Yeah.
And, you know, back then everyone was using digital SLRs, Canon and Nikon were everything. And then Sony moved in and we saw Instagram. I think we talked about Facebook is buying Instagram for $1 billion. It's a picture sharing site. Why would that be worth $1 billion?
And I don't think either. Well, I don't remember what you thought, but I was of the opinion then Instagram's going nowhere. Like, it's never going to be a thing.
Yeah.
So I was way off on that.
Do not listen to us when it comes to future investment opportunities.
Yeah. You know where you really want to put your money.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't remember what you said, but I know I was way off.
Oh, I'm sure I was very negative as well. It seems crazy to me. It's like there were five people working for the company or something, 12 people, and they'd sold for $1 billion. You're like, what, $1 billion? Now, of course, $1 billion now is like, you know, that and 50 cents will get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah. A billion won't even get you into the club anymore.
No, you know, but it is crazy how, I mean, not only technology going into mirrorless cameras and and seeing film disappear 20 years ago, no one was, people were like dumping film to get their first digitals or whatever it is and like turning their back at it. Now all the kids want digital cameras, film cameras again, or crappy digital cameras.
Yeah.
Give me a 2-megapixel digital Elf from 2001. That's what the kids want.
That's what they want.
And those pictures look terrible, you know, but
they've got a vibe, Bill. They've got a vibe.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I think we've gone through the community going up and now, you know, the commercialization of all of that community has changed everything. And I don't know. It's just,
I think there was no, you know, there was no, we knew what algorithms were in the abstract.
Right.
But they weren't sort of ubiquitous with engagement.
And they probably weren't quite as manipulative. Yeah.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not. Yeah. The only, remember Tom Hoops?
Sure.
So Tom's got a community. I don't know if he even still has the community, but he started a community. It was called Underexposed.
Okay. Underexposed with Tom Hoops.
Underexposed. Yeah. And I think he was using Circle.so
as I've never even heard Circle.so.
Yeah, Circle. I think it's Circle.so as the back end. Maybe that's gone now. Let me see. Circle.so. Yeah, Circle. So I think that's what he's using to power the whole thing.
See, I've never even heard of. See, this is all these products I've never even heard of.
Yeah. But it's, you know, a couple $100 a month.
Yeah.
So you've got to have buy-in from the beginning. And yep. I think one of the most attractive things about any of these things, Instagram, Facebook, you know, Threads, whatever it is, Flickr, they were free.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Or they were wasn't Flickr Pro only like $30 a year or something some crazy.
And it really
low
was
price.
Just about keeping the images that you had on there. What was the other, what was the Flickr thing that other people started using? It's the Flickr clone that was more
500 pixels.
Oh no. Other than that, no? I think it was something along. I thought it sounded like Flickr, but it wasn't. It was like Clicker or something like that.
Oh, I don't know.
Anyway, go. So yeah, but Flickr. Yep.
So I'm looking at Tom's community. It looks like it's still up and running. I don't know, you know, what kind of numbers they're getting. It's £9 a month or £90 per year.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
So,
I'm just kidding. Pounds?
Well, Bill, pound is a reference to the pound sterling.
Oh, pound sterling. You should have said pound sterling. Then I would have understood you. Yeah.
So I don't know whether there, it seems like there are a lot of, I'm just flipping through it. It seems like there are, you know, his photographs and other people, I guess. Sure. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just not my, here we go. I am having hard enough time taking pictures of myself, let alone taking them for other people. And
maybe those two things can be one and the same, though. Maybe the things you're taking for other people.
Do you take pictures for other people?
You mean like commercially?
I mean, when you pick up a camera, are you doing it for you or are you doing it for the people who are going to be viewing those pictures?
Oh, 100% for me.
Right.
I don't know what, I wouldn't even know what they want to look at. So even trying to second guess that is silly. And the things that I tend to be drawn to are little details of things.
Right.
You know, a little piece of a building or, you know, a texture of something. I mean, that's, you know, every once in a while, someone, you know, maybe a street portrait of someone, but yeah, they're always just for me trying to make sense of like where I'm at or connect with someone or, you know, no, I don't. And I've never, let's see. Have I ever shot for money? I don't think I ever have. I think I second shot a wedding back in the day once.
Right. Does this sharing the final image, does that go into your brain at all? It's really just the act of taking it.
No. And in fact, it's become just the opposite. I don't really care about it at all.
Yeah.
And that's why I've been, you know, I've actually talk to Claude. How do I get rid of everything on Instagram? Because I thought you had to do it one at a time, but apparently you don't. You can, there's a page you can go into and almost
that's handy.
Yeah, in the Photos app, you can select whatever happens to be visible in the window. So you can do, I don't know, 20 at a time or 30 at a time, whatever
it is.
Yeah. So at least it's not delete once, delete once, delete once.
Yeah.
You can speed up that. And then, you know, he said, make sure said, make sure you download the data first. And here's how you do that. And but I don't have any interest in that anymore. I don't have any interest in the performativeness of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even when I do my projects where I'm shooting every single day for things and whatever, I post them, so people can see them, but mostly just to sort of prove in an almost OCD way that it's done.
Like almost like signing a painting or something.
Yeah.
That's it's done now. It's
released
up and out.
And now I can move on, right?
Yeah. Like, I can't do anything else because now people have seen this, this iteration of it, this state of it.
I liken it, you know, sometimes if I'm going for a walk, and I'm not OCD in a lot of ways, but sometimes when I'm going for a walk and I'll say, you know, I'm going to walk all the way down to the end of that road or whatever.
Yeah.
If there's a telephone pole at the end of the road, I have to touch the telephone pole.
Oh my God. Same way. Yeah.
What is
I'm
that?
The same way. I don't know. Like if I walk over, if I walk with Cooper over to the backstops.
Yeah.
If we're walking to the backstops, I have to touch the backstops.
You haven't gotten to the backstops unless you've touched it.
Yeah.
Otherwise you're not there yet.
You can see it. That doesn't count. It's not seeing. It doesn't count.
No.
Or if I want to go get, you know, get him a drink of water, I have to go to this drinking fountain. That's the one that counts as the we went and got a drink of water.
Right. You have to physically touch it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's similar when it comes to photos where it's like, I need to take the picture so that it's done. And I need to post it so it's done. It's not the same as, you know what I mean?
What if, okay, let me ask you this. If that's the case, and by some off chance, you notice something about the photograph that you go, oh shit, I didn't catch that.
Do I take it down?
Do you take it down, fix it, and then put it back up? Or do you live with it? Because it's in your words, it's done.
I live with it because I've probably obsessed about that enough. I've probably obsessed to the point. I'll tell you what I'll do. I will take pictures and I will, I will take pictures. I will finish them, quote unquote. I will export it. I will put it over to my phone. And then when I load it up in Instagram on my phone to post it, sometimes I will look at it and go, oh no, I have to change something. And I'll go back to the computer and make changes and then send it over to the phone again.
Seeing it on your 6-inch screen gives you more pause than seeing it on your cinema display or whatever.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll notice things that I didn't notice before.
Okay. I can relate to that in that if I post a VO for a newsletter
and I've
mastered it or whatever, mixed it, you know, done my little channel strip and I listen to it on my headphones. And then I listen to it on my monitors here. But if I listen to it on the phone and I notice something about like, oh, there's too much low end or there's not enough low end or this mid sounds really, I will go in and tweak it and re-upload it.
Yep. Yep. So I totally like that. So
wow,
I will do that for little images that are on Instagram. Now, is anyone looking at my images on Instagram nearly as detailedly as I am looking at them? No.
Yeah, probably not.
Well, I'm sure there's some listener out there who's just like, Bill's pictures suck because he puts too much sharpening on the left corner of, you know, like I'm sure that person exists and thank you for being there and make sure you email me and tell me all the things I'm doing wrong.
Yeah.
But I put them posting for me is me touching the telephone pole.
Yeah.
Me touching the backstop. It's not so that other people can see it. It's just so that I can move on.
Do you know what I have considered lately? And I don't, I've been listening to a lot more music, and I've been listening to a lot more artists on Bandcamp and, mm-hmm. and finding new music. And their recommendations have been very good. I get these emails on Fridays, you know, here, recommended for you. Your Bandcamp suggests blah, blah, blah.
If you use the word organically in the next 10 minutes, I'm going to slap you. No, I'm just kidding.
What happens organically?
No, you were just like, yeah, okay. I like finding new bands organically.
No, God, no. Okay. Here, let me put down my granola. Okay. So Spotify used to have this plan, service, feature, whatever you call it, called Music and Talk, where you could sign up and have you could do your own radio show effectively and use, the music from their library, from their catalog. And if somebody listening to that was a Spotify member, a paid Spotify member, they would hear the whole song in between, you know, the talking.
Yeah.
If they were not a paid member, they would get a 30-second preview.
Okay.
Okay.
Reasonable.
They discontinued it for some reason because
it was a good idea and people liked it.
Right. Hey, people seem to really dig this. Let's kill it. But anyway, there's a new, I don't know if it's new, but there's another service called, what is it called? I want to get this right. It's not Mixcloud.
Okay.
Mixcloud is what it's called. And basically, it's a similar kind of thing. You sign up and they pay the royalties. They pay you pay X number of dollars a month, but they pay the royalties and you can have your own radio show.
Okay.
And play commercial music. And like, I keep coming back to this idea of, cause I did a little thing a while back where I was doing like a YouTube live where I was just talking and it was like a little, you know, I was using Podsafe music from like Free Music Archive or, you know, some of the other, this was several years ago now, but I love that idea of telling little stories and then go, here, listen to this. I'll be back in a minute.
Yeah.
And go, or, you know, telling a story about, you know, something or, you know, themed shows of like, you know, best first records.
Sure.
That for many, like that kind of thing. I keep coming back to that more than visual stuff.
It's funny. You want to be the kids who want the 2-megapixel cameras. You want to be an 80s DJ.
Kind of. And have since the 80s, really.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And part of it is, you know, I've been, you know, getting back into my synths and reconnected with Gary Yost, who's doing some really interesting things with electron gear and hand pans and,
sure.
and, you know, the Microcosm reverbs. And he sent me a video the other day and said, hey, check this out. I think you'll dig it.
You could have stopped with Gary Yost is doing interesting things, but yeah.
One of the most interesting people I've ever met in my life.
He's the best.
And such a sweetheart, just has the biggest heart. Gary Yost, if you're listening to this, I just adore you. You're just fantastic. So thank you for being my friend. Anyway, so I keep coming back to this idea of, you know, nobody's going to listen to it, but I really enjoy the idea of sort of following in the Joe Frank, Joe Benson, Jim Ladd kind of framework that I grew up listening to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe you should do that.
I mean, it might be fun just for a couple of months, you know, sign up for 2 months and go, or 3 months, give myself 90 days and go, okay, I'm going to try this for 90 days. See what happens.
You do an hour a day.
Yeah. If I dig it, I'll keep doing it. If I don't dig it, I'm not going to do it.
I have a friend who's a DJ on XM radio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Mark Hamilton. He's a good friend of ours. And
wait, Luke Skywalker?
Yeah. Yeah. He's on the what is he on? I don't listen to that. The Spectrum and.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wait. So do they do that in studio or do they outfit them at home to do it at home?
I don't know that I'm allowed to say.
Okay. Cause it sounds like a lot of these people are in at home. It sounds like there's a lot of room noise. It's not a studio.
Oh, really? Interesting.
And yeah. Yeah. A lot of DJs I have listened to lately, they sound like they're sitting at their dining room table.
Interesting. I mean, I think there's some of that. I know that Mark always sounds really good, but he takes pride in that. But it's so interesting that, you know, he's been around since the 80s and 90s doing the DJ thing.
Wow.
Ever since he was in like a high school radio station or whatever it is, and then a college radio station, and then he worked for BCN in Boston, and now he works for XM radio, you know. So he's been doing it for years, but it's just, it's a very specific kind of person who does the radio DJ thing, you know.
I felt like the little bit of it that I tried on the YouTube stuff, yeah, I felt like I wasn't very good at it. But it was partially because I didn't have a lot of music as filler, so it was mostly me talking, and I feel like I am better like this. I feel like I'm better in conversation than I am. I'm better at dialogue than I am at monologue.
Sure, sure. Unless you're reading something you wrote previously.
Yeah, or unless you're somebody like Joe Frank, who is just incredible at riffing and coming up with these crazy stories.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You listen to sometimes Marc Maron when he was still, and he would have those ones where he would just talk himself for 20 minutes at the beginning of a show or something.
Mm-hmm.
You're just talking into a mic. Yeah. I mean, you're a neurotic nut, but right, it works, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Your neuroses is entertaining.
Yes. That could also apply to us, my friend. Yeah.
Not saying it doesn't.
Hey, I have a slight rabbit hole for you.
Hit me.
Sony 7506s.
The headphones.
Yeah, the headphones.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a pair now.
They changed the way that they're made.
Did they?
Yeah.
How long ago?
I forget when they changed it, but apparently the new ones are not the same as the old ones. I have read this on some of the headphone forums. I think they sound a little tinny to my ear.
Well,
they're a little bright.
Okay, yes. The answer is yes, they are a little bright. In fact, they're a lot bright. But so I had a pair. I'm wearing them right now. And as far as like the best headphones you can buy for $100, these are pretty good for a specific sound. However, the pads started wearing out. And so a friend of mine says, oh, those, you know, the leather pads make your ears sweat a lot. All the cool kids get these velour pads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're the Alcantara or
I forget which brand I used, but I just found something. Some on Amazon and I ordered some. And I put them on and the headphones sound completely different.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Like, is the velour absorbing some of that high end?
No, the velour is stopping the bass from being trapped in there, so they just sound even more high-endy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I thought I was going crazy. You know, I'm like, what is going on, right? So I said, okay, I'm going to order some new leather pads for it. So I ordered some new leather pads on Amazon, you know, some no-name brand $20 pads, but leather ones. And I put those on, and it still sounds terrible to me. Apparently, it's very specific about the kind of leather that it is. Like, the pleather doesn't work quite as well as the actual leather that...
Wait, so the 7506s, they were real leather?
I don't think they were, but whatever. The Sony ones, the foam that they used or whatever it is different than a lot of the aftermarket ones. So now I'm crazy and I think that I need to find actual OEM pads because these sound terrible to me.
They used to make another one that it, on first glance, they look almost identical. And I think they were like the V6. I think it was called
the V6 and the 7506s are basically the same. They're the same driver.
Yeah. I always found them really bright, though, like uncomfortably bright.
Yes. Well, that's the thing. I was doing some music mixing the other day, and I was like, is this really what this sounds like? Because this is so bright, it's hurting my ears.
Mm.
So I switched to my old standby Sennheiser 580s. And those are super laid.
Are those open or closed?
They're open, and they're laid back, like super laid back. So they roll off the top end. So they're sort of an opposite problem, you know? It's really hard to, so I guess two things. One, it's really hard to find headphones that sound good that make you feel comfortable. I still think maybe the 70 or the 770s, the DT770s. I think that's
what I use. The Behr Dynamic, the DT770 yeah. Pros.
Which impedance do you have?
80.
Okay. So that's the middle of the road, right?
Uh-huh.
3280 and 250.
I didn't have enough to drive the other ones. I didn't have enough to drive them.
Theoretically, if you have a better amp to drive them, the higher impedance will sound better.
Mm.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I like them. They're super comfortable.
Yep.
They are detailed without being sort of tooth vibratingly bright.
Yep. So, but it also is amazing how one person could say, oh, your pads are flaking, whatever. You got to buy new pads, and you go on Amazon, you buy new pads and you stick them on. And if you're not super anal about it, it may sound terrible and you don't even notice that it's because the pads, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things like that in life where you may not even be aware of the change that happened just because I don't know exactly where I'm going with this.
But are you too close to it?
I think that you are.
I mean, if you took them off for a month and didn't use them for a month, put the new pads on, didn't listen to them for a month, put them on in a month, are you going to go, that sounds great.
I don't use headphones very much at all. In fact, if anything, I think that I don't use over-the-ear headphones all that much. I use my AirPod Pro 3s constantly. And I would use them for this because I use them when I do my thing with Sandy because she's just using Zoom to record.
Mm-hmm.
Where I have to record, I have to listen to what you're saying. So I need to listen through the Mixpre to record. So I need to plug in. But yeah, no. If I put them on, in fact, if anything, the more I use them, the more I get used to them. If I have them on for an hour, you know, your brain gets a lot of the whole, oh, we had to break in these speakers or break in these headphones or break in this,
whatever it is
actually your brain breaking in, not the headphones. The headphones aren't changing. Your hearing of the headphones is changing.
Well, okay. So you know more about this stuff than I ever will, probably.
Okay.
I have heard and read that you should not mix or master in headphones, that you should do it in monitors. Is that true, or is that a just to taste?
That is very much the classic description, or you know, that's what everyone says. However, nowadays there's lots of people who not only mix in the box, you know, aka in like a laptop, but they'll mix in a laptop on headphones. And then there's people who will also say, we'll use there's software now that will do. You're putting on Sony 7506s. You want to be listening to Genelec such and such monitors. I will do the conversion so that when you're wearing those headphones, it sounds like you're listening to Genelec monitors in front of you.
Oh, really? So it's got a whole DSP thing in it.
Yes.
Wow.
Similar to when we used to do the microphone thing, you know? You're using an SM57, but I'm going to make it sound like a Neumann
U87. Or like John Mayer's new guitar rig plugin.
Yep.
It sounds like his setup, but it's all digital.
Yep. Wow. But it knows what the input is and it knows what the output is. I mean, this is basically the same as any photo stuff, right? You want this to look like Kodachrome, and we know it's coming from a Fuji GFX RAW file. So we know what that file is. We know we've done basically transforms to get from point A to point B. You know, we've taken pictures of color charts with that. We've taken pictures of color charts on Kodachrome, and now we've figured out what the difference between them is. And so we can apply that difference in basically a LUT, and then you end up with Kodachrome pictures out of a Fuji or whatever. I don't know that it always works. I find the DSP, especially the sort of, I'm trying to make it feel like you're mixing in front of speakers, even though you have headphones on. To me, it sounds like Dolby Pro Logic in 1987. You know?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't trick my brain successfully. To me. I don't know. It feels artificial.
Did it ever? Did you learn that
distinction?
No, that
always sounds terrible.
Okay.
To me, that always sounds terrible.
Yeah.
And it may be that, you know, I'm aware that it's happening. And so then I'm thinking about it too much. I don't know, but I can't mix on. I don't have any good monitors now except for my stereo. I guess I could bring my laptop over, plug into my stereo, and then mix on that. And I'm mixing on, you know, B&W Nautilus 804s or whatever, you know, which lots of people master on speakers like that. So, but it's, yeah. Anyway, headphones. So now I have these headphones on and I'm talking to you and it sounds like I'm inside my own head and also really, really bright. You know, it's like, it sounds really not pleasant.
It doesn't sound pleasant at all. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, it's a thing.
So are you in the market for another set of headphones? Or
no, I'm in the market for actual Sony ear pads, I think is the answer.
Oh.
Okay. I actually also have to switch the ear pads out on my Sennheisers because they're completely dead from, I mean, these things break down over 10, 15 years, you know?
Right. But you can't use those. You can't use open backs for something like this, can you?
We used to do our show, I used to use those. Yeah.
And your Heil wouldn't pick them up?
Well, the Heil's dynamic, so it's not super sensitive. A, huh. And then B, it's going out to the side. And C, I didn't keep the volume up very high.
Yeah.
As long as I can hear what you're saying.
That explains a lot.
I mean, I knew when you weren't talking, so that was a prompt for me to talk.
You know, as I go back and listen, that makes a lot of sense.
There's like a light on my wall, and it's, you know, and it lights up when it says I'm supposed to respond.
When I go below a certain dB, yeah. The light goes on. Oh,
I did, however, so you know, I recorded that tune a few years ago, that Time Stop song.
Yep.
And the version I had the vocals from this guy from Broadway. I sent it to him and I asked, could you sing this thing? And he sang the thing. And
it Jonathan Groff?
No, it was a guy who was in Ain't Too Proud to Beg, though. Mm. Serious singer. And which was like the Temptations musical, I think. Anyway, it was really good. But he sent me like a 128 kilobit mixed MP3.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the vocals were not EQ'd well. So it ended up getting, you know, that like weird whoosh, 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 whoosh,
whoosh. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, that weird wishy-washy MP3
was it,
sound.
Was it VBR as well?
I don't know. I never actually looked at the actual specs. But it didn't sound great. But the performance was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And I wrote the guy back and he ghosted me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's like, I gave you what you asked for. Now leave me alone.
Yeah. But I was like, can I have the track? I want to mix it in. And then for a while I would write him occasionally and be like, hey man, like I want to send you some money. Like what's your Venmo? Like, you know, I'd like to do this. And I don't know. I must've said something wrong in one of my emails that offended him or something. I don't know. But he stopped sending it back to me. So I have all I have for the audio for the vocals that I have is a mixed version of the audio of him singing over my original track. The thing is, I have the original track that I sent him. So I could take those two, stick them in Logic, invert one of them, and just play with the volume.
Oh, to kind of
to subtract
like a
out.
Phase cancellation type thing?
Yeah. To pull out almost all of my track without messing with him, but it still had all the weird MP3 things. Those like pre-echoes and all that nonsense. So I had my friend Brian Cook years ago mix this thing for me in LA, and the version I sent him, he mixed it and the whole track sounds amazing, except for like the vocals aren't quite what I want them to be, not because of his skills. He did great, but like just because the original track was not that great.
Right.
So a while back, I bumped into this weird, I think it was a YouTube channel or an Instagram post. I do not remember, and I did not save it, and I'm kicking myself, where this guy used a series of plugins to basically reconstruct a really crappily recorded vocal track.
Oh, wow.
Like he was like adding harmonics to it and like adding high end and, you know, compressing it in certain ways. And he like took this thing that was unusable and made it sound really good.
Oh, wow. But you don't remember what it was.
I cannot find this thing because I would follow some of it to try to do. So the other day I wanted to give myself something to do. So I pulled out the original track that he gave me with the music on it. And I used RX tools to pull out just the vocal to turn down the other stuff. And I got something a little better than what I did when I did all of my crazy stuff. The problem is that, like, when you turn down the, when you turn down everything but the vocals also includes the background vocals. So the background vocals are a little bit in there too.
Oh.
And then I used some of the
And you can't use like the go ahead.
No, well, there's only vocal slider in this particular one, you know, which is annoying. But then I used some spectral repair things in RX, trying to like brighten it up, like not brighten it up, but just sort of add high end to it where it wasn't there. Cause it's not like you could just EQ something, cause if something's not there. And then there was like a lot of like low end, I'm trying to create the thing. Like there was like a little bit too much chestiness of, what the hell is it called when proximity, you know, bump. Anyway, I was doing a version of this and this is what I was trying to mix, but I don't know if it's better than my original or if I just think that it is. You know, maybe I'll send it over
to you. Well, and you're listening to it through headphones that are wonky now.
Yes. Although this is, I mean, at least with the mixing, I can do it with the Apples, which I'm really used to. But like mixing on a pair of AirPod Pros seems weird. You know?
A lot of the kids do it, though.
Man, the kids do a lot of things. I don't. Yeah. Anyway, this is long and short to say that headphones have been driving me crazy lately. But I hate the idea that I'm stuck on process speed bumps.
You know what I mean? I mean, you have an expectation that I should be able to sort this out better than I am.
Yeah, yeah. I have skills.
Right.
I know what I'm talking about with this stuff and it's flummoxing me and I don't like that. That makes me angry.
Right.
And it makes me want to just say, why the hell am I doing this in the first place? You know? Anyway, neither here nor there.
But somewhere.
It's somewhere in the middle, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to use your photographer of the week and we'll save mine for next time or vice versa?
Can we do that?
Yeah. Whatever you want.
Let's do that. Sylvester Mako.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people know these pictures because of the wife of the Mamdani's wife.
Yeah.
Which are really cool pictures, but she's a pretty cool looking lady.
I saw them. I first saw the Elle Fanning set. Really whimsical, really sort of theatrical. If you like, the work of someone like Tim Walker, yeah, you're gonna dig this stuff.
He likes pointy shoes.
He loves pointy shoes.
Yeah.
I love the one of Willem Dafoe in the house.
Yeah, with the box on his head. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a whole series. It was a Cate Blanchett one in there. Really interesting. And I think one of the things that I like a lot about his work is, while the settings are these sort of whimsical and very, very sort of fantasy oriented, the color palette is pulled back. So it doesn't, I think there's a great taste there instead of, because these could easily be like, you know, La Chapelle garish kind of thing. But because he's pulled the color palette back, there is something more palatable, you know, about it. They don't sort of scream.
Yep.
You know, the there's a subtlety to them despite the theatrical nature of the setting.
He's also seems to be a big fan of like almost a paper texture over the top of things.
Looks like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like this stuff. And apparently, let's see, when I do love that the link that you sent me, that the ping pong picture, I'm looking at it right now, is so good.
Wait, which one? Which is the ping pong picture?
The here. Hold on. That one. It's halftone, and I'm becoming obsessed with halftones.
Oh, that one. Yeah.
So apparently, this guy was born in, raised in Hungary, and so has these sort of Eastern European influences.
Yeah, definitely screams that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I just love the work. I think it's interesting. It's fun and playful, but it's still kind of serious as well.
It's gotten a little bit of the, even like Roshenko, like it goes back to almost like cutout kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Of course, he's cutting things out in the real world mm-hmm. and sticking them in there, which is different than, you know, what they were doing back then, which is cutting out the final things like you're kind of playing with.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's making, you know, cardboard or some sort of props that go along with them. But I really like the textures and the tones. You know, some of these things look like tarot cards or, you know, they look like they would be in a stop motion, you know, a still from a stop motion film or something. I really like this stuff. Yeah. I really like it.
Yeah. I got to, for a while there, I was playing with sort of the stuff over the top thing.
Mm-hmm. How did you like it?
It's interesting, and I think I maybe need to go back to it. There's something to it. It's weird. It's like, man, this is a longer, you know what, we're going to quasi table this for next time. Cause I think it's a good topic of conversation.
Okay.
I'm just going to put down overlays.
Okay.
Cause this is a thing that, my buddy Matt Carr and I give each other hassles over. And it's like you want your image to be there when you take it, and having it be something that you know you need to manipulate to get it where it's going to go feels false.
Like you should be able to do it, just do it without having to force it.
Is yeah. Like if the picture okay. isn't amazing out of the camera and you have to put, you know, paper overlays on top of it to make it look the way it's going to look, is it a good photo to begin with, or are you saving a mediocre photo, you know? And I'm not saying that about Sylvester's work. His work is beautiful. I think it would be very cool regardless, but you get my point. You know, I think they would look very different if you removed those layers.
Yeah.
They would look more ordinary if you removed those layers.
Well, yeah. I mean, some of this stuff approaches, you know, old master oil paintings.
Yes.
Like that kind of lighting and texture and almost like a scumble kind of a, you know, two colors kind of mixing over the top to give it a little character. But it's, I really do like the work a lot.
No, they're very cool. And obviously he has really good, makeup artists and
set
designers, like all the people who are working on these things. That's a huge part of it.
Yep. Agreed.
Are these teams of people that he has working and really cool looking subjects and all of this stuff, right? I mean, think of all the things that you have to have in order to make images like this.
Yeah.
All the clothes and all the walls and the houses and the, you know.
I would love to learn whether this stuff is bespoke per picture or...
I'm just gonna some stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to build this stuff so I have it and we're going to keep using it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's the house hat thing he used in another picture too.
Okay.
Down.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, oh yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So that must be something that he has on the shelf, you know.
Really interesting stuff though.
No, super, super neat stuff. I wish I had that kind of, vision.
Yeah. I mean, there's a sensibility to it where, and I think you could, I mean, you have talked really passionately about some of the, like, you know, Caravaggio and Rembrandt, some of those kinds of lighting and textures. But I would imagine you also have to have a reason to do it.
Yep.
You know, the headshot or the, you know, the commercial, the more commercial leaning project is not going to find a home for this kind of style.
Yeah. And honestly, this kind of style, even if you're doing a lot of it for editorial, you know, or fashion stuff,
mm-hmm.
I mean, some of that stuff has budgets and some of it doesn't have much budget at all.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So
you're either going to, you know, figure out a white background solution, or you've got, you know, $50,000 to build this whole mock-up.
I wouldn't be surprised if he lost money on a lot of these projects he's doing just because he wanted to spend a lot of money on cool sets and stuff. And it ended up being really cool pictures.
Yeah.
But it's not like you can spend $25,000 on your average, you know, Elle magazine shoot.
Right.
So, I mean,
that would be an interesting discussion. That would be a really interesting discussion to see where, you know, are you even the reusing of certain things? Are you reusing it because you like the way it looks, or you wanted something similar and didn't have the budget necessarily for this one? So we're just going to use what's left over from like that. Where does all that fit
in? I mean, it's like half the Dan Winters is, you know, one of our heroes. We talk about him all the time. You've spoken to him on the phone. I've spent a little time with him. He takes amazing pictures. But a lot of the stuff he does is like, wow, that's incredible. How did you get to do that? Well, I had a $75,000 budget to build sets out.
Yeah.
Well, no one else gets $75,000 to do a thing for Wired magazine.
Right.
You know, or whatever. Right. You know, so there's like a certain amount of maybe if you're independently wealthy and you could just kind of spend that kind of cash just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Or maybe he's working with, I don't know really much about this person other than what I've read over the last little bit.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's working with artists in collaboration who want to see, maybe the people who are making some of these set pieces, they want their work to get out there too. So there's
tell you what,
I'll make your stuff if you use it. Yep, in your photos and then credit me.
But all of those people need to be at a similar level for it to be useful. You know what I mean?
Sure. Sure.
But yeah, no, I mean, it's some really weird, cool stuff. It's very specific.
Mm-hmm.
It feels very, young, not young. That didn't mean to be dismissive. I just mean that it feels like a younger person making these things who has, you know, that
it's
drive.
Fresh. It's fresh.
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. It's very cool. Good job, yeah, Sylvester.
Good stuff. Sylvester Mako.
Plus you spell Sylvester S-Z-I-L-V-E-S-Z-T-E-R.
M-A-K-O. Yeah.
See, Jeffrey, if you just spelt your name in a weird way that was difficult for people to remember.
then I would have made it.
Then you, wait a minute.
That's all right. I'm okay not making it. At this point in my life, I'm okay.
What do we got? podcast@ontakingpictures.com if you want to send us a message. If you have any thoughts about what we've said.
Yeah, please
do. We enjoy getting them. By the way, I'd like to say that I didn't realize that a lot of the messages people were sending us were going to my spam.
Oh, are they?
Yes. A lot of them. But there's also a lot of spam going to our...
Yeah, we get a lot of spam at that address. That I get more of the spam passed through than the actual messages.
Right. So there's a lot of spam there, and then it marked a bunch of stuff as spam that wasn't spam. So for some of you who I replied to late, it was partly to do with the fact that I didn't realize that they were in my spam thing. None of them came through to my thing. All of them went to spam, but I found some of them.
Cool.
So I wrote back to most of you, I think.
Well, and apparently we have a QuickBooks payment that's late.
Yeah, exactly. I got a really good one. Yeah, the other day it was my American Express card. On Taking Pictures American Express card is overdue, Jeffrey.
Damn it. I meant to get that to you.
It's okay. Do you recognize this purchase on your Capital One Business Cap One alerts at info.net? From Amazon for $8,487.45.
Yes.
It's pending. You got to click the no if something's wrong to fix it.
Go. You know what? Go ahead and click it. What's the worst that can happen?
What is the worst that could happen?
Don't click those things, people. Ever.
No.
Do
never
not
click those things.
Don't click.
All right. So podcast.ontakingpictures.com. We love getting your feedback. Jeffrey would like to know what else he should scan with his scanner.
Yeah, right.
Don't be lewd. And
How thick is the glass?
It's like, yeah. It's a Christmas party circa 1992.
Yeah, right. What is that? Oh, God.
We will talk to you soon.
All right. See ya. Going on and on the way we are for so long. To any fool, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say.
Say, I know what you will say will leave me out.